Kurzweil is first and foremost an OCR program designed for, you know, reading print and taking printed word and making it possible for you to read it. There are a lot of enhancements to version 11, but is there anything that enhances the ability to read, just straight read text?
I certainly hope so. There are new updated OCR engines. That's something we do when they come out. We tend to keep fairly abreast of what's going on in the world of OCR technology. And the new releases, the version 11 has what is, it's a little complicated with a mix of version numbers, but it has the latest OCR engines from Nuance, which is the new company name for what was ScanSoft.
And that was that also, and they put out OmniPage, right?
Correct, right. Okay. And so we have the latest OCR engine from Nuance. We also have the latest OCR engine from Abbey, which is the company that makes FineReader. Now, when I say new, I have to be a little bit careful here because the way commercial OCR vendors work is they put out their product, say OmniPage version 15, and then something like half a year to a year later, they put together a toolkit for people like us who resell their technology wrapped in a different product. Now, I don't know if they do that sort of to protect their own share of the market with their own commercial product, or if it's just a matter of their own, you know, development schedules. But nonetheless, in general, that's what happens. So often, you know, people have seen OmniPage 15 on the street probably for, you know, what, about a year. FineReader, Abbey FineReader version 8 has been out for quite a while as well. We now have those versions of OCR in our product. Another little tidbit about the OCR is that both FineReader and what we're still calling ScanSoft, because that's what they call it, ScanSoft OCR, both of those now have a fast method and a slow method, fast being theoretically faster and less accurate on some types of material, slow being slower but more accurate on some types of material. And I think in version 9 and 10, we had what looked like three OCR engines. We had ScanSoft Fast, ScanSoft Accurate, and FineReader. Now it would just be ScanSoft and FineReader, except there's another property that allows you to determine whether those engines should be fast or slow. So you haven't really lost an OCR engine. It's just the way it looks.
On modern-day systems, do you really, I mean, does slow really seem slow, like some of us who've been around for a while might think in terms of, does it make a really significant difference in terms of, you know, running that thing on the quote, slow version in terms of the accuracy gain?
According to Abbey, who is the one who just added a fast-slow version, their fast is up to twice as fast. And indeed, for some documents, OCR can take a long time even on a fast computer. I mean, the way in which OCR has gotten better over the years is primarily by taking advantage of the larger memory and the faster processors that are available today. So recognition tends to expand, to, you know, fill the resource, take up the resources that are available.
Let me give you a chance to answer a question that I'm sure a lot of people have. We'll talk about all kinds of neat things that K1000 does, but if all a person either feels like they can afford or feels like they want to do is to scan a document into Word and read it, they're a competent Windows user, they don't have $1,000, and we'll talk about maybe some other options for getting Kurzweil a little later that don't cost $1,000, but I know you've also done some enhancements in Kurzweil to improve OCR outside of the engine. Is it is a person going to probably have a better just straight reading experience with Kurzweil in some cases, even just with reading and reading text because of some of the work you've done, as opposed to just going out and buying a copy of OmniPage Pro and using that to read?
Yes and no. First off, are there things that we do that attempt to get better OCR than, say, the commercial products are getting? The answer for the most part is yes, but only around the edges. There are some things that we do that are highly customized to our kinds of applications that we think improve the recognition. Some of those have to do with pre-processing, things that you do to the image up front. Some of them have to do with post-processing, things that you do to the text before you cause it to be spoken. Having said that, it really is around the edges. I think the OCR results that you'll get from a commercial OCR package will be, in most instances, very much as good as what you would get from our product. What you get primarily for the extra money, and it is a considerable amount of extra money, are a few things. First off, you get features that really are specific to a blindness product that really make more sense in the blindness business than in other businesses. It's unlikely, for example, to get OmniPage and be able to convert to Braille within OmniPage. Obviously, you can do that with extra steps, but it's hard to do it alone.
Or DAISY.
Secondly, or DAISY or various other things. Secondly, you will get a user interface that is designed for you. And that, of course, is not something that you're going to get with OmniPage. And part of that, from a user interface perspective, is ease of use, and part of it is simply being able to do common things that a blind person would want to do with a document in a very small number of steps, so it's more efficient. It's considerably faster to get things done. A real fundamental issue has, from sort of the beginning of blindness-based OCR products, is really, really wanting to be able to read while you scan. And that's still difficult to impossible in standard OCR packages. And I guess the final thing that I would mention is that you have a customer support or technical support people who actually are familiar with this particular product, are familiar with a blind market, in our case tend to be blind themselves, and whom you can call toll-free and actually spend some time on the phone with.
Yeah, that's all pretty
very
unique.
Very different from commercial OCR software.
Quite different.
So having said all those things, I recognize that $995 is a lot of money. What it really depends on is how much you scan, how important is it to you to get access to hard copy, and if it's something you do every once in a while, absolutely, you are better off with commercial OCR software. It's going to be a lot less expensive.
Now, there's some pretty nifty things in version 11, and I think the one that might be most revolutionary, let's talk about forms recognition. Apparently, a person can take, tell me what forms you've done this with, but IRS forms, job applications, scan them on a scanner and have some chance that they're going to come out in a format that you can tab through and fill out the form. If not tab through, arrow through. Is that correct?
Right. This is something people have asked for forever. People have wanted this kind of application to work for a long time. It was a long, hard decision as to whether even to put this in. I'm comfortable with the fact that that it's a good first step and that I can improve it over time. Having said that, I think it's still somewhat difficult to use, and I think probably about half the forms you would scan, you would not be able to get a satisfactory result from. So it's not easy, but a blind user does have a shot at being able to take a paper form, convert it into something electronic, fill it out, and print out the filled out version without assistance. And that's something that people haven't been able to do before. Again, absolutely not perfect. There's a bunch of different ways in which it doesn't always work. But essentially, it's very simple. It's simple. There's basically, you have a re-recognize as a form menu item, And there is also a scan as a form menu item. If you use the scan one, it's only in effect for one page, even if you use a document feeder. So there's a presumption that you can obviously scan multiple pages and scan each one as a form, but you would do that each time using that option. It does a standard character recognition, and then it does another character recognition using technology that comes from Nuance, and it is the same technology that is in the product Omniform. So it's exactly the same stuff as in Omniform, it's just used in a very different way. Once the form is recognized as a form, when you start to read that page in a document, it will tell you this page is a form, and it will tell you how many fields there are on the page. You can then use a menu item in the edit menu to fill out the form. And what that will give you is a series of dialog boxes where each control in the dialog box is a field from the form. And some will be text boxes, some will be check boxes, some will be groups of check boxes. And if you press a couple hotkeys, it will tell you more about that field, like the text nearby it, exactly where it is on the page physically, how many characters we think you could reasonably type into it, that kind of information. So it will give you some help. Now, it's worth my pointing out what sorts of things go wrong, because lots of things do go wrong. First off, a lot of forms are designed to be processed after they're filled out by an automatic scanning system of some sort, and those scanning systems tend to have marks on the page that are really designed for the scanning system itself to identify the field form, etc., etc. Some of those end up looking like fields, and so you will end up frequently with fields that aren't really there, shouldn't really be filled out. And it's often kind of obvious because they tend to be very close to the corners and they tend to not have any text that identifies what the field is. So we won't label the field. That's one thing. But there are, unfortunately, others. You know, there are circumstances where a field will be skipped and it might be an important field. There are circumstances where a field will be identified as a field properly, but the label will be incorrect. And a sort of trivial example is I've scanned up forms where there's three fields for name, and there's a label that says name, and then the fields are last, first, middle initial. And what the Kurzweil 1000 tends to see is a field called name, and then one called first, and then one called middle initial. Now, if you just tab through the fields, you'll figure it out, but it does require a little thought as to exactly what they mean by name there. There are some other examples of a few things that can go wrong. Those are some of them. Actually, my favorite worst case right now is a document that asks for a social security number, and according to the form recognizer, the length of the field lets me type in three characters. That would be frustrating.
That would be very interesting, a truncated social security number.
Yeah, not something you really want to do. So I would not use this to fill out IRS forms, you know. But for casual form usage, it's certainly something you can experiment with. We have ideas as to how to improve this in the future, and basically they involve relying less and less on the Omniform technology and doing sort of more and more analysis ourselves, because unfortunately that's what it needs. But it's a good first effort, and it's a pretty interesting feature.
Well, it's another case where, again, blind folks need something different than sighted folks need. Sighted folks can figure out the form. They can look at the picture of the form, and they'll figure it out. Blind folks need additional analysis, so it kind of makes sense that you need to deviate from, again, or enhance what Omniform offers.
Yeah, one of the other things I've been saying about this is that blind people shouldn't think that filling out a form is easy for sighted people. We do it wrong all the time. It's amazing because the label for the field might be above or below or to the left or to the right of the field itself, And often until you sort of skim through the entire form, you don't know. And it's very often the case that people start filling out forms and realize after about the third line that they filled out every field incorrectly.
And it isn't uncommon to miss things either, right? It's not like sighted folks recognize every field that needs to be filled out on a form either.
Yeah, part of it is that there's no, you know, like college class that someone takes about how to design a form properly. Form design is done by amateurs, and it's done very badly, even by people you would expect better from. Some of the Social Security forms are just terribly laid out. They're awful.
Really too complicated, hard to, yeah, difficult to figure out. They try to make it their language simple. Anyway, it's an interesting mess. All right, so that's a fascinating feature. I don't know of any other program that does that. It's even making that possible for blind folks. And, of course, printed forms are a little bit less omnipresent than they used to be. Sometimes you can get away with doing them electronically, but that doesn't happen a very high percentage of the time either. So,
well, and the sad thing is so many people, there are a lot of PDF forms that are simply scanned images.
Right.
Which is nuts. I don't know why anyone would allow that.
Well,
I hope that, you know, when you see things like that, that that I would hope blind people complain loudly about it, because this is completely wrong.
They're totally inaccessible.
Yeah.
Something that, of course, fascinates me a lot, moving on to another feature, and one that I've had a little trouble getting specifics on, is the multilingual dictionaries.
Okay. Let's see. We have a bunch of... By the way, regarding specifics, let me do a quick little ad as to for one place to get specifics about version 11, which is that I started a blog in order to sort of have another mechanism whereby I could talk about the product without having it filtered through several layers of writers and marketing people and website designers and stuff like that. So there is a blog called K1000ENG, and it's just www.k1000eng.blogspot.com, and it now has something like 14 or 15 fairly lengthy postings all about version 11. In fact, it's what I'm looking at on the screen as I say this, so that I can remember some of this stuff as I go along. So that is a place to go in case someone's interested in looking at those things.
Great.
So let me look at a posting on bilingual dictionaries and see what I wrote, because you'll want to know things like what pairs
exactly
are available. The bilingual dictionaries, there's 12 pairs, I think, and there is French to English, English to French, Spanish to English, English to Spanish, Dutch to English, English to Dutch, German to English, English to German, Italian to English, English to Italian. It just happens to be what we could get access to.
Mm-hmm. These are commercial products that you've licensed, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
For some of them, particularly for the French, Spanish, well, just the French and Spanish, there's actually three different choices of each of those. So there's actually six little dictionaries for French to English or English to French, for example. These dictionaries are relatively small compared to a monolingual dictionary, and the definitions are rather terse. There isn't a whole lot of text. The system, when you read the definition, will automatically switch speech engines on you in order to read the words in the definitions with the proper pronunciation.
Of course, one of the nice things, if you haven't already figured this out, about Kurzweil for folks is that if you're doing anything in a foreign language, you can have independently set speech so that your English can go at one speed, and if you're a foreign language learner, chances are you won't go as fast in the foreign language, and that can be it'll be a separate engine. It'll go at a slower speed, and so obviously it'll, when you're looking at your definitions, it'll switch seamlessly from one engine to the other and handle that in a way that you can actually read it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's so these are not then perhaps you might say major bilingual dictionaries that you've licensed, but at least it provides some access to translations. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, they are basically what you can get for electronic bilingual dictionaries. There's a funny situation regarding the makers of dictionaries, which is that in the United States and in Great Britain, it's relatively easy to go to a dictionary manufacturer and license a dictionary for electronic use. That has not been the case in Europe for European languages. The dictionary makers there tend to hang on to their data and be very, very afraid of making it available electronically. Hmm. So it just has been harder for us to get large monolingual dictionaries in languages other than English.
Oh, okay. So now another thing that's fun about version 11 is talking about bookport, importing documents at different bookports. Bookmarks.
Yeah, I mean, people have, again, this is something people have asked for regularly, which is they've wanted the ability to use sort of popular features in the product and have those features actually persist in document formats other than KES. And in previous releases, basically you could create bookmarks and you could create notes in any open document, but when you saved your file, closed it, and read it back in again, you might be surprised because they might disappear on you. They would disappear if you saved the document in any format other than our own, which is KES, or once we support it at DAISY 3, because we do support notes and bookmarks in that format. What we've done with version 11 is we've created a database on your computer that contains information about basically the key to it is the size of a document and the name of a document. And then within that key, it's got bookmarks and notes, any number of them, and of course it's also got the last reading position. So if you open a file, let's say a Word document, and you create some bookmarks in that document, and then you save it as a Word document, those bookmarks are still going to be there. Even though the bookmarks physically are not in the Word document, because we don't control that format, and we don't even know how to make a bookmark in some of those formats. Rather, the information is in this database. Now, one thing that means is you can't send that document to a friend of yours and have him read the bookmarks. They won't be there. But they will be there for you on your computer.
With the last reading position, does Criswell automatically open to it, or do you have a hotkey that allows you to jump to it?
It's automatic. So if you open that document again, you'll always be at that position.
Okay, very good. How about DAISY? Do we have some enhancements in how DAISY is created or processed or imported or anything in this version? I noticed more things about bookmarks, I thought, or creating DAISY files based on bookmarks. Is that?
Well, we've done that for a few releases.
Okay.
For at least three releases now. When you created a DAISY document and a DAISY audio document, we would preserve bookmark information and use that to build the navigation structure that is in the DAISY document. And I have to say, I never know the right term for what they call that in DAISY. It might be called a title. I'm not sure. But those titles, or what we call bookmarks, will be preserved in both DAISY 3, which is for us text only, and DAISY 2, which for us is audio only. And so we will preserve those. The one thing that's really new about DAISY in version 11 is the ability to open a DAISY 2 audio file. So if you have a non-protected, i.e. no digital rights management, DAISY 2 file, which consists basically of a collection of audio files and navigation into those audio files, we can actually play that now, which we've never done before. While we're at it, you could also just open an MP3 file, you can open a WAV file, and you can play those in Criswell 1000. So it's just like a file open from our perspective, except, of course, if the document is not editable and you don't really have access to the text. Rather, you have access to bookmarks, to notes, to pages, if the document contains pages, and you can go forward and backward and move around in the document just as you could in any other document, and you can play the audio file and read it. Further, we've added technology to speed it up and slow it down. So if you want to play an audio file faster or slower than its default speed, you can.
Any comment on whether you're going to look at either getting licensed to play RFBND books or provide an add-on for the U.S. for the NLS digital format when that comes out?
I'd be very interested in both of those. I've talked to RFBND about it a few times. I haven't pursued it as aggressively as I might, because in the long term I'm less interested in audio than I am in text. But at this point, now that we read audio, it would make sense to be able to read those as well.
Well, I think a lot of us would encourage you to work with NLS on their format as well. That'll be available sometime next year.
Great.
So, all right. I've kind of covered what I remember of the new features of version 11, and I'm not looking at a screen. What else big or small is in there that somebody might want to know about?
Okay. Well, one that I think is actually kind of a sleeper, I think it's in that it's not theoretically a big feature, but I think it actually makes a big difference, is we finally support scanner buttons. So if you have a scanner that has buttons on the scanner, you can configure those buttons to start Kurzweil 1000 if it's not started, to scan a page. If Kurzweil 1000 is already started, you can configure a button to just scan a page. Further, you can configure a button for the Kurzweil fax utility, and you can configure a button for the Kurzweil copy photocopy utility. So it's a big deal in one respect, which is that if you are scanning a book, you're positioning that book page by page, and often it's a lot easier to move your hand to the scanner button than it is to move it to the keyboard.
Do you have to know anything about these buttons in advance in order to configure them? As a blind user, I think probably a lot of folks know that their scanner has these buttons and may never use them much.
Right. It is often the case that the buttons will come pre-configured based on the scanner software that you've installed. And what you'll typically find when you push one of these buttons is a small little Microsoft dialog will pop up saying you've got more than one application that, you know, can respond to this button, pick one. And you will find that one of them is, you know, Kurzweil scanning. You need a screen reader, obviously, at this point to answer these questions, or the person setting it up for you should ideally push all the buttons and configure them the way you want them. But if you have a screen reader, you'll be able to hear this. You would select Kurzweil, and further, you would then check a checkbox that says, always use this application. Having done that, then there's sort of step two, which is the application that runs would not be Kurzweil 1000. It would be a little voiced application of ours, which will talk and which will let you choose between running and having Kurzweil 1000 run, or the fax application, or the copy application. You pick one of those three, and that becomes what that button does. Further, there is a feature in the scanner configuration diagnostic to unset things, because of course once you set them up, that's the way they're going to work until you unset them. So if you really need to change them, you've decided that you want a different scanner button configuration, you could do it through the control panel, but you can also do it through a Kurzweil 1000 diagnostic. So a little tricky to set up, but it's a nice feature.
Yeah, it might be nice for, like you say, for people who are scanning and maybe for whatever reason don't want to use the automatic new page feature, the multi-page scanning feature, and want to just push a button. It is an awful lot easier to reach over and push a scanner button than it is to reach over and find F9 or whatever.
Sure. Something else that's new is there's an appointment calendar in the product. And so that's an appointment calendar application. You run it just like you run any of the other Kurzweil applications, which is from the file launch dialog. Once you run it and use it, i.e. if you set up applications, then it's run automatically at startup. And the reason it has to run automatically at startup is pretty simple. If you have appointments, you're going to want to be reminded of those appointments, and the only way to do that is to have this application up. Usually it is minimized and running in the background, and you have no real way to even switch to it too easily. But it does have a hotkey sequence which you can define and control that will bring up the application. So ultimately, once you've used it once or twice, you don't need to use the file launch facility. It's a fairly simple speaking, calendar application that will allow you to set up recurring or non-recurring appointments. It will allow you to control exactly how you want to be reminded about those. And essentially, that's sort of it. It's fairly straightforward. It does not synchronize with other calendar applications or with PDAs, which is sort of an obvious thing that people would want. But in order to get it done, we just wanted to get something done, and we'll add features to it over time as people ask us to. But right now, it's pretty straightforward and pretty simple.
So once you've launched this, you don't have to run Kurzweil in order to use it. It'll remind you of appointments just outside of Kurzweil in your day-to-day life.
Right. And I would say if you are a happy Microsoft Outlook customer, there's absolutely no reason to use it. But if Outlook is a little more confusing than you want, because it's a very complicated program, this might be simpler.
Okay.
Now, let's see, what else? The ability to scan and recognize from within Microsoft Word. So if you have Microsoft Word, you will be able to use the technology within Kurzweil 1000 to scan pages and to recognize pages while staying inside of Word. Our application does not actually come up, but we just run various components in the background as DLLs. Kurzweil scan and recognize menu item that gets inserted into the insert menu in Microsoft Word. And there's a Kurzweil options dialog that is a menu item at the bottom of the tools menu in Microsoft Word. And this has been tested with Word 2002, 2003, and the upcoming Word 2007. It does not work in Word 95 or 97.
I don't think much of anything works in those versions anymore. I know that other OCR programs have been able to do this for a while, so this is kind of something that people might sometimes want to do.
Right. I wouldn't consider it a really high priority thing for the reasons that we talked about before as to exactly why one buys a product like this. If what you do is you want to scan and recognize from within Microsoft Word, there's no real advantage to using a Kurzweil 1000 to do it, as opposed to using a commercial OCR product to do it. The main reason for us to add the feature is because if indeed your OCR product of choice is Kurzweil 1000, you ought to be able to do it.
Can we deviate from new features for a second just to answer a question that I suspect you get every once in a while? I know part of the answer to this, what it used to be. Can a Kurzweil user, what criteria will dictate which of the engines, leaving aside the fast and slow choice, but which of the engines you want to use? I know that for a while, if you had recipes you needed to scan, you were better off with the ScanSoft engine because it did better with SuperScript fractions and things than FineReader. But are there any guidelines one can hang one's hat on that to help one make that choice other than just testing documents on the engines?
It is pretty hard to predict. But both engines have changed somewhat. And the advice that I have tends to date back to my experience with older engines rather than newer ones. So it may be somewhat suspect at this point. But indeed, fractions are somewhat better with ScanSoft. There is also a type of text called small caps, and small caps tends to work better with ScanSoft. Now, how would you know a document has small caps? basically, if you find the first line of chapters to always be garbled, because small caps tends to be used to introduce new subjects. It's a type of text that is using the form of a capital letter but the size of a lowercase letter. And it's always confused, fine meter or something fierce, but it's fairly good with ScanSoft. There are circumstances where ScanSoft decolonizes better than FineReader. Now, having said that, I have often found there are occasional documents where ScanSoft is horrible at, but it's very hard to characterize what's wrong with those documents. It just happens. And so I tend to think of ScanSoft as being a little bit on the flaky side here and there, where FineReader is often more robust and just, you know, it's not always the best, but it's often, it more often produces acceptable results.
And again, for the person who's contemplating a purchase, this is one way to get the two best, or at least what I gather are the two best, two of the best OCR engines in one package. You're not going to get that if you buy a commercial package.
Right. Certainly. And they are really the two best. The third possible choice on the market is Reed Iris, which I pay some attention to, but which I think is definitely in third place. It's a fairly distant third.
Okay.
So it's simply not quite as good a package.
All right. So back to new features. Anything else that we haven't covered so far that people might want to know about?
Well, let me first say that a long time ago, the other recognition engine we used was ExpertVision RTK. And people who have old releases of Kurzweil 1000, we've always kept the ability to use RTK if it's on your system. And we even provided a mechanism whereby you can install it if you have an old CD of Kurzweil 1000. So if you still want to use RTK, which is the least accurate but by far the fastest of the OCR engines, you can.
Yeah, they just seem to have fallen behind badly over the years.
They, as a company, simply are not focused on OCR. They do other things now. And they still sell OCR, but yes, it just hasn't been really upgraded in a serious fashion in a long, long time. So let's see, other new features, I'll go through these fairly quickly. I've already mentioned playing audio files, but the thing that I didn't mention that's kind of cool is I mentioned you can, you know, play an MP3 file if you want to. Well, keep in mind you can create bookmarks and notes. And so you can have an MP3 file with bookmarks and notes, which is really kind of neat. Now, the obvious next step, which we didn't do in this release, is if you have a MP3 file with bookmarks and notes, it would be nice to be able to write it out as an audio DAISY file, because then you could share those bookmarks and notes. But we haven't done that. But someday,
how about the ability, maybe, and there's enough blind folks use Winamp, the ability to import time markers from Winamp might be kind of interesting.
Yeah, it would. I don't really know much about them, but I agree.
So
yeah, Winamp is definitely one of the apps of choice, so that's neat. Let's see, other things. One that people have been asking for a fair amount is now in the system, which is the ability to link documents and setting files. And basically the reason why this exists is, in particular, one of the main things is that people will go to a fair amount of trouble to come up with just the right scanning and recognition settings, and will scan, you know, many pages of a book and then have to go off and do something else, and will either forget to save those settings or will forget what they saved them as when they come back to read the book or to continue scanning the book. That's annoying. So in the configuration settings dialog, there's now link documents and settings. It has three values, disabled, scanning settings only, and most settings. The default is disabled, and the reason it's disabled by default is this can be a pretty confusing feature if you have it on and don't understand it. Because if you set it to scanning settings only, then it's reasonably safe. What it means is when you open a an existing document and scan a page into it, we will be loading the scanner and recognition settings that existed at the time you last closed that document. And so you will end up with scanner and recognition settings that are appropriate, we hope, for that particular document. And, you know, scan a page, and that's the settings you will get. That's fairly safe, not a bad thing. The other setting, possible value for this, is most settings, which makes it so that every time you change what your active document is, almost all your settings, such as not your configuration settings, but reading settings, for example, and display settings, will all change based upon what settings were in effect the last time you had that document as your active document. And there are funny ways where that could be really confusing, but it allows you, for example, to bring up a document and have it play at with a particular speech engine at a particular speed, and switch to a different document and it's using a different speech engine at a different speed. Things like that. Sometimes that's a really good thing, but I won't pretend that it can't be confusing. It can.
Speaking of speech engines, and you haven't added anything in version 11, as I understand it, on this. So you're supporting. Is this the same? I'm confused, and maybe somebody else is, because JAWS has now come out. They're supporting I believe they're supporting ScanSoft. I'm not sure which speech they're supporting. Do you know which one you're supporting versus which one they're giving?
Well, if they're using ScanSoft, I would assume that they're using ScanSoft RealSpeak Solo.
Right, that's what they're doing.
Okay. And those are very nice speech engines, which we may choose to sell separately. We have the rights to them. We used to use their engines all the time. Originally, those engines were from Learnout and Housby, and of course, we were a Learnout and Housby company. So we were the first people in this market to use those particular speech engines. However, we dropped them for the English market because we like NeoSpeech better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, there are some new RealSpeak voices that are really very compelling, really quite good, and the RealSpeak voices have a larger selection of voices. So I would like to actually make them available at a reasonable price, but I probably can't afford to put them as well as NeoSpeech into the base product. So what we've got is NeoSpeech and ETI Eloquence. Now that is a change because we, in previous releases, have used shipped IBM TTS, also known as IBM VoiaVoice TTS. The reason we moved to Eloquence, which frankly, to my ear, sounds exactly the same as IBM, is Eloquence, which confusingly enough is now sold by Nuance, same people who sell RealSpeak, is being supported better than IBM TTS is. There were serious bugs in IBM TTS, and we could not get anyone to fix them. Whereas for Eloquence, I've had serious bugs already fixed by Nuance. So I just think it'll be better supported. So we went to it instead.
Okay. So actually, I'm not sure. This is new enough. People have just gotten their JAWS CDs. I think I recall seeing that those voices, unlike the JAWS version of Eloquence, that the RealSpeak Solo voices actually are made available to other applications. So it may be that JAWS users who have them will be able to use them in Kurzweil.
Oh, yeah, they'll work fine. We have no real problem with RealSpeak Solo. In general, we have no real problem with any speech engine that's well-behaved and that pays attention to SAPI, you know, SAPI 3, SAPI 4, SAPI 5, any of those we support.
Have we missed any new features?
I'll quickly mention a couple others. One, the ability to write files onto a CD. So this plays well with the ability to create audio files. You can create MP3 files or WAV or DAISY audio within Kurzweil 1000. And it would, as a consequence, make sense to be able to burn those onto a CD directly. Obviously, people can do that outside of the product, but sometimes it's convenient for some people to be able to do it within the product itself. So there is a whole, you know, menu of features to allow for writing files onto a CD. And you can, within the create audio file dialog, you can actually specify a folder on a CD that is where you want those audio files to end up, and it will begin, it'll set that up for you so that the next step is all you have to do is write the CD and you're done. So that's there and fairly handy. I will, one thing that's important about that, and it actually influences the OCR engines as well, is the choice of operating systems, what operating system you use. The burning to a CD feature is not useful on Windows 95, 98, or ME. Further, the new version of ScanSoft OCR will not work on any of those operating systems either. So, if you install, say, on Windows 98, we will install an older version of ScanSoft's technology, of the ScanSoft OCR. We have no choice. The new one will not work. And that form recognition feature is dependent on the new ScanSoft. So form recognition will not work with Windows 95, 98, or ME. Neither will the new version of ScanSoft, neither will the ability to write CDs. So those operating systems are, well, let's just say they're showing their age.
You're going to see more and more of those problems as the right. weeks and months go by, I think.
This kind of falls out of form recognition, but we added a feature that allows you to scan signatures onto your computer inside of the Kurzweil 1000. So you can have some number of named signature files. And then to be able to insert those signatures either into a field in a form or anywhere in an open document. So if you want to insert a signature into a document, you can. That won't necessarily be always preserved if you were to save it. Depends on the format you save it into. First time I've thought about that. But you can, of course, print it. So it's there for that purpose, if not anything else. I actually haven't experimented with what it will save to.
Be interesting.
Yeah. I'd be a little surprised if it survives going to, say, Word. That would be a happy surprise if that actually worked.
That'd be the place you'd actually probably want it to go, would be the Word, if anything.
Yeah, although Word, of course, already has the ability to do that on its own, so you could create documents that way.
Okay.
Conversion settings. There are a whole mess of settings that influence how we open documents that are not KES, how we save documents in formats other than KES. They are quite detailed and quite specific, and they allow people to control, for example, whether or not we should insert page breaks when we open an RTF file or a text file. Those sorts of things are particularly important for people who are doing production editing of documents, which includes, for example, everyone, all the volunteers in Bookshare.org, many of whom use Kurzweil 1000 to create the books or to edit the books. So we added features like that in part for people like that. An important one there affects PDF. When you open a PDF file, PDF files are complicated in that they can contain pictures of text, images, and they can also contain real text. When they contain real text, it may be out of order, it may only be partial, or it may really be everything you need. Hard to say. There is a setting in the conversion settings dialog where you can cause our open to pay attention primarily to the real text or primarily to the image. And the image recognition is somewhat slower, somewhat less accurate, and on the other hand, if you don't have complete text in there, may be the only way to get a reasonable access to the material. And so that one is the default, but the other one exists as well. Anyway, there are 22 other things, but they're fairly small. And
does
again,
that,
all of that stuff is in the blog, if you want.
Does this conversion, something that I'm dealing with personally, get into what happens to, say, accented and upper ASCII characters? Do you have any control over whether the ANSI characters are preserved or whether they're either stripped out or turned into ASCII letters? Or is that something you have you get into at all?
Not in the conversion settings, but I can point you in the direction of a program in the extras folder, because there is something in the extras folder, which is a nice place to explore anytime you get one of our CDs. Looking for it right now, which was written in order to create text files that were 7-bit instead of 8-bit ASCII. And I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it's called Strip Text, striptxt.exe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small DOS application that will take a text file, eliminate all characters that are not 7-bit ASCII character set. And when run with a single file name, it will overwrite that file. It can also be run with two file names, the first being input, the second output. And it will try to, when possible, it will try to substitute another character or a character string for those characters. The thing that is handy about it in some respects is you could launch it, you could use it in the file launch facility. So you could set it up as an application that you launch inside of Kurzweil 1000 and leave the command line arguments field blank, set the document required list item to yes, set minimize to no, set convert if necessary to yes, and the format to text. Do that, and when you launched it, it would take care of the 8-bit to 7-bit issue.
This is a fascinating example of some of the individual, the customizability and the power that a person has of some of these individual problems that you can get into with tech support for solving problems that you have that maybe nobody else much has. You know.
Yeah, I mean, there's also in the extras directory, are two programs that are designed to reverse the order of the pages in a KES file. Why? Because every once in a while someone scans a book backwards.
Yes,
it
can happen.
It happens.
So, all right, actually my problem was the reverse. I want to avoid the conversion. I want to keep the 8 bits in a text file, and I'm having a hard time doing that. So,
interesting. Because I don't think we will automatically get rid of that. But there are... The other thing is that if you do a file conversion and you, in the list of conversion of formats, there's other. If you look at other, you will find there are some text formats in that list that are actually supplied by a third party, some of which will do things like move to the MS-DOS character set or move to the standard ASCII character set or other things. Exactly what they do and how they do it, it's been a long time since I've looked at them.
Right. These are pretty obscure questions. On to some couple things that are going to concern more people, a lot more people. What is the status of K1000 with Vista?
Good question. And first off, the bad news. The bad news is that every version of Kurzweil 1000 before version 11 will crash on Vista. The crash occurs after 5 minutes, and it doesn't matter what you're doing. Once you run the product, it will crash after 5 minutes. It's incredibly annoying. And, you know, it turns out the problem has to do with a component that we licensed from a third party that allows us to do the things that we do with zip files. And we have updated that component in version 11, so if you go to version 11, Vista will work reasonably well, at least with regard to that particular problem. We have been, at the time that version 11 was released, we ran K1000 reasonably well with Release Candidate 2. There were a couple issues, and those issues will be resolved in a patch. And they're relatively minor issues. Our ability to encode MP3 files worked, but only if you use the lame encoder. That was one issue. The other issue is that if you use Office 2007, we don't use their conversions well. So you'd have to use our internal conversions. And both of those problems we expect to fix in a patch once Vista is actually shipped.